This is the job episode 48. It's me, Ray, here with Candace Briglib. Hi, Candace.
Hi.
And it is Design Week 2014 here in Portland, which is very exciting for a design studio. And the reason that we're all slightly hungover, except you.
Except me.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Must be nice. We had a lot of whiskey. A lot of amazing ice cream, some brownies.
Yeah,
some kids played here.
So we had our open studio this week, and it was great. Salt and Straw sent us a bunch of ice cream to sort of celebrate the launch of their site.
Right.
That we redesigned. It was, ice cream was amazing. So thanks to that, and our friends at BT Baking sent some brownies and. And then, of course, we had the whiskey. We need a whiskey client.
Yeah, we just bought the whiskey.
It was fun. We met a bunch of new people and made some videos. We made a kids
coloring page.
Yeah. Maybe we'll send that out to the Twitters.
Yeah. Yeah, on the internets.
Oh. I love Design Week in Portland. There's so much energy around it, and... it is a beautiful week. When has it ever been this nice at this time of year?
I know, right?
Let's just enjoy it.
Let's stop fighting and just enjoy the weather, right? Stop all these wars.
Mm. So you saw a talk this week that you were really excited about.
Yeah, I actually saw Melissa and Kelsey of Daily Toulajou speak at Umpqua Bank, which was fortuitous because... yesterday morning, I then interviewed them for this very show.
In the square, right? This was live.
Portland's living room, a very appropriate venue to talk to them about what they do. We were in a giant geodesic dome, one of three that they set up for Design Week. It's super cool. If I was going to say anything that was not perfect about this...
okay, yeah.
It was the sound, because it was just... it's in the middle of downtown Portland, in the open.
It's ambience.
It's very ambient.
They're going for that.
It's very loud.
So you just want people to know that you are not responsible for the honking in the background.
The sound quality is not our best at this podcast, but in terms of interesting conversation... I can't think of a better one. On that note, let's hear from Melissa and Kelsey. I have two guests with me today, and why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Melissa. I'm co-founder of this design studio, Daily Toulajou.
And I'm Kelsey Snook, and I am a senior creative partner.
Jay.
So we're going to talk a little bit. Why don't we start at the beginning, and maybe let's hear the story of how this agency came about.
How we met and fell in love.
Because it starts with that.
10 years ago, Melissa and I met in London at Central St. Martin's. There was a master's course called Creative Practice for Narrative Environments, and we came from different backgrounds. It's a multidisciplinary practice. So Melissa came from a kind of a graphics background, and I came from kind of an industrial design background.
It's always kind of.
Yeah, kind of. And we had the shared interest in creating spaces and experiences that can communicate stories. And then the other interest that we ended up turning into a thesis project together is how you get people to participate and engage in those spaces. Like, what's that magic mix that draws people in to participate and do something?
The studio itself actually was born when I got back to Montreal after London. Kelsey went to Portland, and I went back home in the name of love to Montreal, and I met another girl she was in New York, not in London, and who came back home in the name of love. And it was Muna Andreas, and we met and we clicked and we decided to start a studio together. That didn't have any name at the beginning. We really started with just projects, and slowly we had a team, and slowly we had a space, and then we found a name. And Kelsey was always in the portrait.
Okay. Was the idea something that evolved for what you do, or was it there from day one?
What the idea of?
Well, I mean, I consider what you do to be sort of creating narrative environments, yes. Shared experiences from people.
Yeah.
Was that what you started with as a goal?
Yes, definitely. It's what we studied, Kelsey and I, in London, and it sticked with us. And it's also what Muna was doing her own way in New York. So narrative is environment is her thing. Interaction design and participation, I would say, is also a focus. But in terms of the shape that the projects take, it takes us into a whole different sets of journeys.
Okay. And it seems like a lot of what you do is kind of involves technology as an enabler for the types of projects you do. Maybe you could tell us about one as an example and how that may have been a challenge, or how you work around the technology to do what you set out to do in a project.
Every project starts with identifying a purpose. You know, what do we want people to do? What's the just kind of core experience?
Technology is really just we consider it as a set of, it's part of the tools that we have mm-hmm. to make a project. And it is taking more and more place in our lives, so it is taking more and more place at the table of solutions when we identify the purpose and start tackling a project.
Some examples.
Oh yeah, if you think of an example, I will say one thing about just how we treat technology. We kind of just first identify what we think is a level of engagement or kind of interaction that we want people to have, not necessarily the interaction design or technology that we have to use initially. So first, when thinking about like kind of what's that story that we want people to experience, or what's that kind of purpose, meaning for people to interact, then we think about what technology, low or high tech, and for example, just outside here, is a really low technology. That humans over there are interpreting tweets that are happening, and it's a kind of a beautiful mutation of a dialogue, but it's...
You want to describe it?
Oh, right. So what happens outside is Design Week Portland's, for those of you at home, is we are in the domes at headquarters in Pioneer Square, and all the tweets that are happening during Design Week are being designed by designers and hung up on flags, color-coded each day in Pioneer Square. So today we are yellow.
So I've been thinking about an example for you.
Okay.
And I haven't been thinking very hard, because the first thing that comes to mind is the swings. Technology is often seamless in our projects, or very accessible. In the case of the swings, we did a set of 21 musical swings in Montreal, and now we have a kit of 10 swings that are touring around the world. And in creating these musical instruments crossed with urban furniture, it's really about this intuitive interface. And magically, the swings make music, but you're not necessarily conscious that there's technology under your seat, the seat you're sitting on. And in the same way, when we've done a set of interactive projections, and often we will choose SMS, like texting and systems, versus intelligent phone usage and having to download an app for whatever you need to do, just so that it's really easy, accessible to all. And
so when talking about experiences like this, obviously people have a lot of shared experiences online, on Facebook and so forth. But that's not what you guys do. Why isn't Facebook good enough? Why do we need public spaces like Portland's living room here?
Well, one of the things that just we've been talking about the past couple of days is just the fact that when you are online, the way that many social media experiences are crafted, they help introduce you to your circles. and your kind of sphere and people connected to you. And that is kind of a model of how people meet and expand their networks. But it's being curated for us. And I guess you could say that we're curating the experience as well. But there's something, there is this kind of, when we talk about these magical things that we love about creating spaces, you today in Pioneer Square are sitting next to strangers and other strangers who are passing by because there's transit networks and all these other shops around. So there's something about just rubbing elbows with strangers that lets us, it's kind of like this democratic process.
No, very much so. There's Michael Sandel that we often quote that has this beautiful saying in this idea of a common life and how it's important to share a common life by just, you know, having a sense that we live together. And I think there are more and more people living in cities. It's undeniable that we need to find ways to better live together, because it will be more crowded as we go on and more issues arise when this happens. So how can we like create a base for communication so that when problems arise, there's something that's set for things to happen together?
So kind of serendipity is democratic on a personal level, maybe.
In how it helps you to gain awareness to others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would say so.
How did going back to the musical swings, you guys are kind of known for that. That was maybe how has that set the tone for your business since then, or changed the nature of your business, or helped you get clients?
Clients. We work a lot on arts commissions. We have an interesting model. I think my favorite one is when Steve Deeds says that, so you're designers who work mainly on arts commissions. So the swings were very much so an arts commission. But they got great exposure, and we learned a lot because the project has been going on every spring in Montreal. So in repeating a project, you get to learn every, you know, with every edition, you try to make it better. And so I think there was a lot of learning that came from this project through its success and the fact that it's been showing repeatedly. At the same time that we showed the swings, we also had Giant Sing-Along that was quite popular, and that's also, I think it provided us with enough variety so that we're not only stapled to the swings.
Right.
But how has that gotten us, has that elevated business for us from doing that?
Well, definitely people knew us, know us from that project. I mean, sheer publicity.
Last night you alluded to Oprah. Did Oprah mention the swings at some point?
It was one of her favorite things.
Okay.
She showed it. We were part of her Super Soul Sunday show. It was really nice. We saw our film with Oprah's voiceover.
Right.
Felt like Santa Claus.
Another thing that you did in Vancouver was the...
Yes.
The video piece that was...
Did we write the year?
Is that the thing that...
McLarena?
Yes, where it was kind of a loop of, so that project in particular seemed extremely complicated and technical to pull off, more
really?
So than a lot of the other ones. It did, to my eyes, when I was watching that. Did you run into things that you just couldn't do, or was any of it just impossible that you were trying to accomplish there?
I'm really curious, because you saw more of the...
Behind the scenes,
so maybe that's why you have this impression.
Okay.
Actually, McLarena was one of the easiest that we've ever done.
Okay, interesting.
And maybe also the guts are more exposed in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the swings, everything is hidden, and you can, like, barely sense the technology. With the McLarena, there's a button you push, and there's this, you know, there's an immediate feedback on screen, so maybe you can sense some...
The
technology that is part of the project. But I mean, it wasn't that simple, but compared to other challenges that we've surpassed, it was not so bad.
What was the most challenging thing that you've done?
I think the amateur intelligence radio for some parts. It's a robot community radio, and I think just trying to come up with, you know, an artificial intelligence for a building that tells stories according to what's happening in the building was quite a challenge.
It sounds
challenging. But a beautiful idea.
Yeah.
But the swings also had an interesting challenge because of just the physicality of them, and how they were successful meant also how they needed to be robust. And we learned a lot, not only about technologies, but also engineering and the
like
whole
the
world
manufacturing. Of, it became into a manufacturing thing. It was it started off as a one-off installation, which was fine. It lasted that season, but then to make it, you kind of had to go into manufacturing mode to make it industrially designed to withstand every a repeat use every single year. And that's just a whole different kind of way of thinking.
Yeah, the fact that people use these things so much seems to introduce a new dynamic that maybe complicates the process. As you say, having to learn manufacturing to make it. I noticed that you've done a lot of things in the Twin Cities. What's the connection there? Is there a particular connection to the Twin Cities that you guys have?
Well, we know Steve Dietz from Northern Lights. He found us. And at the beginning, it was a competition. And Giant Sing-Along came about through that competition. And it was a really wonderful project with Steve. And it was for the Minnesota State Fair and with the State Fair. And through that came other projects. And
but
also
then
the
a
Walker.
Totally different connection was through the Portland Art Museum.
Yeah.
Okay. We met the Sarah Schultz, the curator of public practice at the Walker Art Center. So there's kind of two different relationships that happen to reside in that area.
Yeah. I don't know if you were hoping for more to see. We can make up something.
No, that's
great.
More
exciting.
That's perfect. How do you, I've looked on your website and you have a very diverse team, which makes perfect sense considering the diverse projects that you do. Do you find yourself having to hunt down people to help out on a particular project, or how do you find people who are interested in this kind of a thing?
I think every project dictates the kind of team that will be required, and when we approach external collaborators, it's often for what they're good at, so it speaks to them. And for all the rest, internally, we all share the same schizophrenia in terms of multidisciplinary approach. We all have done something and now do something else and are interesting probably into something else for the future.
Yeah, but there's this thing, I think we probably have a spidey sense for who has that same shared interest in, genuine interest in human interactions and storytelling. Who gets it? Who really gets what you mean when you say engagement? And who gets what you mean when you say storytelling? And just kind of practices that.
In the context of narrative environments, we need to be careful now when we say storytelling, apparently.
Oh, yes, everybody does storytelling, yeah.
Watch out.
Right. Is there a type of a project that you just, dream about getting, a dream project for you, something super interesting?
That's an issue we have, actually.
Okay.
Do you have a dream project? Because I have this conversation with Muna over and over, and it's something that we don't have. We don't have a dream project. We have many endeavors. We want to work in different types of contexts. We're starting to work in Brazil right now, and that's really exciting. And that's always been part of a dream.
Okay.
Yeah,
working
in developing countries and
maybe
trying
there's
to see
a
how we can
location.
Make more of a difference. Exactly, it's more like seeking the perfect context, and then we'll see what the project comes about. But do you have a dream project?
I wanna recreate the Village Fete somewhere. There's this there's that, and then there's this project. I just have projects that I'm ooh, I still want that to happen, that came from somewhere. There's that What I Ate project where you get updates from your digestive system. I want that to happen somewhere.
We also have an amazing idea for an escalator.
Okay.
Yes, so if you know any really long, tall, fast escalator, let us know.
Maybe
in the tube or something.
Yeah.
I guess I have one sort of big picture question before we wrap, and I don't know how to ask this properly, but What is it about doing projects that involve people and the public that you like so much? Like, do you ever just get tired of that? Because, I mean, a lot of times it seems like you're dealing with the best in people, and then, like, in terms of, like, maybe things that might happen, like vandalism, you're dealing with some of the worst. And why is it that it's so much fun for you working with people?
I think it's the most rewarding thing because there's, you know, we always talk about expecting the unexpected, and people always surprise you in their ability to be creative with what you offer and to transform the initial idea you had into something sometimes even greater that you could imagine. And I think it's very also a little bit like in performing arts, it's the same energy you get from, you know, from doing a performance, or even if it's others that are performing, it's so thrilling to see people enact or take part into something that you've set up and take it to wherever they want to.
But not in, like, I could imagine that could be like an egotistical, seen as an egotistical thing, like people are doing what we wanted them to do.
It's more like
us being very, very social in a very particular way that we want to. Like somebody would host a dinner party and be so excited that everyone got together and is enjoying food and having that experience together. And I think that's kind of the magic that we get excited about, is that moment where people, we see people connecting or doing things they wouldn't necessarily normally have done by themselves or in a different context. And to be able to make that happen, or to kind of transport people somewhere else for a moment, that just is exciting and
satisfying.
Would
you like my analogy of a Congo line?
Yeah, sure.
Like in the end, you just start something, but it doesn't really matter who started it, and then it's just the fun of being all together and doing something.
But in our presentation last night, we were talking about the finite games and infinite games, and the infinite game is something that's played to continue playing, and a finite game is a game that has an end to it, an end goal. And I think we just like this idea of, in this book about finite and infinite games, they talk about an infinite game being like a language. And in a language, you just perpetuate it. It's a tool that you get to use to continue using for forever.
And then you transform, and that enables you to bend the rules.
Wouldn't it be exciting to create a language and to have it just breathe and live and enable other people to connect and communicate? I think it comes from that, and being able to apply that to real world issues or context to tap in and be relevant to what people are doing. So not just for the fun of it, because it's a playful, lovely thing, but like in the project Rewrite the Year, it was 2011, and what a massive year that the world was undergoing, and we just had this urge to create something that publicly acknowledged and let people connect over that.
We like the term of infinite city, working a lot in public spaces. How can we make our cities more malleable and through engagement? How can they be more in tune with however we're evolving right now? When you think of cities, they're always everything is bolted, everything is made not to move. Of course, it's made to last. But I think one of the big challenge, and that was an interesting conversation we had with architects yesterday, because they're also facing the same challenge in building things to last. How do you build things that last, but that are also made to change? Because everything is changing so fast, and you can't really conceive your environment to be one thing while everything else is going into so many directions.
Are you two pretty optimistic about cities in general?
Okay. Yes.
Well played.
I think in general we're optimists.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for talking to me. I wonder if it's okay if we have time for a few questions, if you guys are feeling up to it. Okay, cool. Does anybody have any questions?
Oh my God.
Okay.
What's your favorite city?
Nah. Do we have a favorite city? I don't think.
You don't want to piss off all the other cities.
A city we don't know yet?
I chose Portland. And I like it here.
I really like visiting Portland. I like many cities. It's a problem.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we're back. Mm-hmm. I recently read a book by Scott Berkun called The Year Without Pants.
Uh-oh.
It's interesting because...
Is this new fad diet you're going to do?
Well, the name derives from the fact that he spent a year, a little more than a year, working for Automattic, the company that's mainly responsible for WordPress. And they don't really have an office in the traditional sense, and certainly nowhere that all of their employees could actually fit at one time. They almost exclusively work distributed. People work from wherever, coffee shops, whatever, you know. They can get a co-working space in their own town. And then people work around the world and kind of, you know, can set their own hours and whatever. So it was interesting. Scott, the author of the book, came from Microsoft. So...
A little bit of a different culture there.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting to me, and the reason I bring this up, is because they use basically a blog for their most important team communication and project management tool.
Hmm. Internal project management?
Yeah. Basically a blog for each team or project, which is, seems crazy. But I suppose they're, you know... You would say they're dogfooding. And then they use Skype for when they need to talk. Dogfooding means using your own product.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is that the phrase, though? Dogfooding? Really?
Mm-hmm. No, that's it. That's it. It's probably
it's
in the urban dictionary.
It's not eating your own dog food or something.
Well, it's abbreviated to dogfooding.
We've abbreviated it to dogfooding? Can we just take a moment to...
So they use their own product.
Oh.
And...
Who makes these terms? Seriously.
I don't know.
What is the one in...
Their blog... Let's focus. P2.
Okay.
Anyway, I was thinking about that. Like, what do we use? We use Slack. And for managing projects internally, we generally use Trello.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really need, like, a thing like... Skype where you can see people because we don't really work out of the office.
Who wants to look at us?
No, it's a very handsome team, but generally we're all in the same room and that seems to work better for us. But
just staring at each other.
I think it's interesting because we get a lot of questions. We just got an email today about, because we've written about using Trello for this kind of stuff, and I think a lot of people find that
fascinating. Yeah. That's why they follow us, hoping we'll drop Trello knowledge.
What I think is funny is every time someone fills out this contact form on our site, and there's just this checkbox that says so much about someone, and it's would you like to subscribe to our newsletter?
Mm-hmm.
And what I find so odd is when someone is like applying for a job or something, and they deliberately don't check that box, like. Okay, I'd love to work there.
You know, it's. I just want to tell you that it's no by default, I think. Oh, I think. I'm pretty sure I set it to no by default that somebody would have to actively opt in. But a lot of times people do it opposite, where like if you don't opt out, you're just there. But I think we were looking for... So, you know, some people might just skip over the checks and the...
Fair enough. And they
However, if you're applying for a job, you might just want to take the time to say yes.
Yes. Well, the thing is, I mean, like, if they just sort of skipped over it and didn't notice it, I don't want to hire that person. They're going to skip over important shit.
Or if you're writing and asking for, like, no offense, but lengthy free advice.
Right.
Maybe you want to...
Just go through the motions. Say you're interested. You know what?
We don't check if you unsubscribe. We wouldn't even
exactly
know.
Let one show up, click the unsubscribe link, boom. Mm-hmm. Who cares? No harm done.
There is actually a way you can check that, but who has the time? Not me.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like that's what reminded me of it, is someone wrote us asking for basically a bunch of free advice. But I don't really want to get your newsletter. Like, I don't want other advice that I didn't ask you to take precious time out of your day.
Although, okay, so that's fine, but I thought the idea
it just seems a little disingenuous.
I'm a little hungover, sorry. That's you.
No, I...
Okay, well,
don't
you know...
Do I sound like that?
Huh? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because even doing more consulting, we're giving a little private talk about like SEO, social media stuff.
Oh my God! We're giving a private talk in Sonoma. That's amazing, people. We will fly us to pretty places, and we will talk to you about SEO.
Yeah, we might discount our rate. And
I cannot tell you how excited I am about that. Wine country, Ray. Do you know how pretty it is there? Nothing beats Oregon, but it's an awfully nice second.
I don't.
We're flying in a little early so we can soak in that beautiful California afternoon. It's going to be amazing. Amazing. Let's do more of that. I know you don't love the sun, but we will find somewhere to sit that has like half shade and half sun like we always do, and we'll survive. It's going to be amazing. And we'll tell everyone about it next week. And let's.
You're also speaking at that Woo conference. Are you excited about that? You got to come up with your slide deck. Hey, you got your slide deck? Look at your slide deck.
Okay.
But I don't want a newsletter, though. Don't. No. Don't send me the newsletter. Okay. It's your slide deck.
Well, let's stop recording this conversation
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Enjoy the rest of Design Week, and we'll talk to you soon.
We're not on the phone.
That's me signing off.
I love you. Bye.
Have a nice day. Okay. Say hi to Ma.